more on this topic by Wei Chang, who will speak on the merits of spin-form computation of pure young Hertz wave.
Okay, thanks. I'd like to thank the organizers for letting me talk about numerical spin-foam computations of DLMLs. I'm Wade Sherrington. This is work done at the University of Western Ontario with Dan Christensen, who you just heard from, and Igor Kavkin, who will speak about me on a separate project. This is based on this archive reference, and I refer you to this paper for all the technical details. Sorry about that. Okay, yeah, this is a lot better. Hello? Testing. Okay. So anyways, yeah, so this talk is just going to be largely just conceptual. It's going to give you sort of hopefully a taste of what the nature of this computation is, how it differs from the conventional methods, and what are some of the possible applications and motivations for it. So Yang-Mills is a basic building block of Starn model, as we all know. The first term involves the quarks and their couplings to the gauge fields, and the second term is what we mean when we say pure Yang-Mills, So it's just essentially the connect parts of the gauge field. And this is, so far, our hard numerical results are limited to this case of pure Yang-Mills. And we're currently generalizing it to the case where we're coupling fermionic matter and scalar matter as well. But for the purpose of this talk, we're just dealing with the pure Yang-Mills. So why do we even study things on a lattice? Well, there's certain questions in physics that only can really be answered non-perturbatively. And for instance, quark confinement is one very well-known example. So just to give you a whirlwind review of this, so we start of conventional lattice gauge theory before passing to the dual model. We start with the path integral over the gauge connections of weighted by this action in the curvature. We discretize on a lattice. So for every edge of the lattice, we have a group element. It's weighted by a discretized version of the curvature. Typically, this discretized agent of the curvature is built up of holonomies around the fundamental plaquette. And so this, as the lattice size gets larger and larger, and you run your bare coupling just the right way, this action goes to the continuum action. And if your theory has correct critical behavior, then the expectation values that you measure on the lattice will be the same ones that you measure in the lab. And so this is a huge industry, this conventional lattice gauge theory. And it's always getting better as algorithms improve and as computational resources become less expensive. So this is essentially, in a way, it's a point of departure in that we're going to go to a dual model, but it's not so much a point of departure in the sense that it's going to be an exact duality. So it's going to contain all the same physics, but it's going to make the physics look much different, and it's going to turn out to be a gauge invariant viewpoint. So just to review very quickly, because the action is only a function of the conjugacy class of the holonomy, you can expand it into the characters of the irreducible representations. You can substitute into the original discretized partition function, and you can consider all colorings of the lattice all colorings of the plaquettes of the lattice by the irreducible representations of the group. And for each such coloring, you have to do this integral, which is a product of the characters that come from the character expansion. And so several nice things have to happen before you have a useful model. And the first nice thing that happens is that you can see immediately from basic representation theory arguments that in order to survive group integration, the colorings, in other words, in order to contribute in a non-zero way to the partition function, your colorings have to satisfy very specific conditions. And so this is a typical configuration. And what it is, descriptively, is that it's a closed branch surface. So the colorings of the plaquettes are by the irreducible representations of the group, so that's the sense in which they're colored. The surfaces are closed, so there's no open boundaries allowed. And moreover, they're not self-avoiding surfaces. They're surfaces that are allowed to intersect along edges, along faces, and so it's a bit more complicated structure than self-avoiding. And so this is sort of looking through a three-dimensional visualization of a typical configuration at a certain coupling. So this is directly taken from our simulation. And just to point out some features, so here we have two cubes in the fundamental representation. They meet along a face, and that face is colored in slightly a lighter shade because now it has spin 1 because both the spin halves contribute spin 1 to that face. So at the bottom, we have what looks like a violation of the closure condition, because here's a case where We have a non-trivial one-dimensional boundary, but if you apply the periodic boundary conditions, this is in fact part of a cube that lives on the other side. So this is in fact correct, and so all the surfaces are closed, and this is just to give you a taste of what this new theory looks like. It's very different from the conventional theory, because in the conventional theory, your variables are along edges, and they're continuous, and they contain gauge. So just to put this in historical context, this is just again what I had on the previous slide, which is to draw your attention to it. This is really the hard part, is to do this group integral in the general case of any coloring. So people were able to do small diagrams. They were able to compute by hand using various tricks what the small diagrams were, and they were able to form expansions that captured a lot of the physics in the strong coupling limit. And so in the strong coupling limit, non-trivial spin is highly penalized, and so these really small diagrams with low spin are an excellent approximation theory. But strong coupling limit is of no interest physically, because the renormalization theory tells you that you've got to run to weak coupling, and in that case, you need to be able to compute any type of coloring that comes up. And so for a long time, this really wasn't well understood how to do this, but sort of the answer to your prayers are really the theory of spin foams. So what spin foams allow you to do is they allow you to systematize these group integrals. And so what you still have on the outside is a sum over plaquettes. But what you've done with the group integrals is you resolve them into a sum over intertwiners. And more importantly, once you've done the sum over intertwiners, you've got a local action. So it's just a function of vertex amplitudes, which just depend on the six edges that hit it and their labelings, and the 12 plaquettes that hit it and their labelings, for a total of 18 spins. It just depends, and then another product over local edge factors, which just depend on the four plaquettes that hit the edge and the edge labeling itself. And this is just a local factor in the plaquettes that comes from the coefficients in the character expansion. And so this is the sense in which spin foams allow you to pass to a local algorithm. So instead of just labeling the plaquettes now, if your configurations include both the plaquette labeling and the edge labeling, you can come up with a local algorithm for simulation, which is extremely important. And so the general theory of the spin foam picture of dual models can be found, for instance, in this work by Oakland Pfeiffer. They look not just at the partition function, but also how to compute Wilson loop observables within its formalism. And so this was sort of our inspiration and sort of our starting point for the algorithm that we then developed to actually get answers out. So first thing you have to be able to do is you have to be able to compute that H and J symbol. And there's a really elegant way of actually getting formulas for this H and J symbol using some of the recoupling theory that we'd already developed for the Birra-Crane model. And so the recoupling theory of SU2 is a very very developed, very, very well understood. And it allows you to pass just from this spin network, apply a few recoupling moves, and come up with a product of essentially just 5-6 J symbols at every vertex. I should also mention this formula has appeared in previous literature, but was derived in a different way. And in spin foam formalism, it just falls out just right out of the diagrammatics almost immediately if you make the right choice of splitting. And so that's the other point I should mention, is that if you'll notice that the spin network here is 4-valent. So that means there's a choice of how you split these vertices, and you've got to make that choice sort of globally on your lattice before you are able to compute anything. And so now all these splittings at the level of the global amplitude are equivalent, but locally they're different, and computationally they may have different properties. So for instance, there's another splitting that we came up with which involved an auxiliary sum. It was slightly more expensive. So I'm just making the point, and it's an important one, that this splitting that you choose can influence the computational complexity of the algorithm that you end up with. So how am I doing for time? Okay, good. So that was fairly straightforward given what we knew and the techniques that we happen to have available with recoupling and so on. Now ergodicity proved to be essentially a non-trivial problem, and so what I mean by ergodicity is that whenever you're simulating a theory using Metropolis algorithms, using generally any sort of Markov chain and Monte Carlo method, you want your moves to be able to take you from any one configuration to any other configuration. So you want to, in order to estimate your expectation values, your algorithm has to be able to explore the entire phase space of the theory, all your configurations. So when your theory is both discrete and also highly constrained, this can be quite non-trivial, because a lot of the things you try may not be able to move you through your space. You may get trapped in certain regions. And this has been a problem for past attempts at dual algorithms. And just to illustrate one simple way in which the easiest thing you might try actually fails is that if you've got a spin foam, an SU2 spin foam that comes up in Yang-Mills, and you change a single plaquette, so just a single plaquette, by a half unit of spin, then the result is always going to be zero. It doesn't matter what plaquette you choose, doesn't matter what the spin was, it's always going to be zero. And so what that means is that the most local change you could think of just doesn't work. You've got to come up with moves that change things over larger areas of the lattice. And so, you know, we sort of came across a similar problem when we did the Baer-Crane model, and we came up with some moves. But in the Yang-Mills case, there's actually more states. There's not, because the Baer-Crane intertwiner is frozen in the original Baer-Crane model, and in the Yang-Mills case, you sum over intertwiners, you also have to change the intertwiners in a way that's compatible with your plaquette changes. So it's a slightly harder problem, but we were able to come up with moves that were ergodic. And so they're ergodic on the space of spin foams, so the labelings of both the plaquettes and the intertwiners. And so when we did this, we also found that when you're trying this, you also want moves that are as local as possible, because if your moves are too large, then you've got to compute changes over a large area, and that leads to computational expense. So this is basically what we did. So we came up with this algorithm. We figured out how to compute the 18J symbols. We figured out what the ergodic moves would be, and we decided to test it. So we coded the conventional results. We coded our algorithm. We coded the conventional algorithm, and we ran both. This is the curve. One lies on top of the other, and we're getting about 1% relative error here. The x-axis, I should mention, is the coupling constant. So as we render recoupling, as you might expect, the expectation value of the spin, which is what we measured, gets larger and larger, because the spin is exponentially damped in the Casimir, but that damping is actually moderate, is controlled by the coupling constant. So if the coupling constant gets smaller, then it's a softer fall off. And so more spins are allowed to sort of coalesce out of the vacuum, and so a picture you saw would be full of higher and higher spins as your coupling gets weaker and weaker. So this is the results. And so significance of these results is that while this sort of dual algorithm has actually been carried out successfully, and it's a powerful tool, an established tool in the abelian case, this is the first results that we know of where there's been a comparison between conventional results and the spin foam, a dual non-abelian algorithm. So this is very much the beginning of this program, because obviously you want to go to higher dimension. This is in three dimensions with SU2. So just to give some motivation, given that the conventionalized community has very sophisticated algorithms and has been doing things for years, why would you want something that's just completely different and in a way maybe just reinventing the wheel if you're just going to get the same answers out? Well, it's true that obviously you want to get the same answers out, but on the other hand, what the spin foam picture does is it gives you a gauge invariant picture. And so basically the configurations of the simulation can be interpreted as spin foams. So they can be interpreted as the history of the physical degrees of freedom of the system, of the spin networks living on the lattice. And so not only when you do your computation, you not only just get your answer out, but you actually have a story for what's actually going on physically in the simulation. So it can sort of inspire effective models of confinement and so on. So that's one reason. Pure Yang-Mills is obviously of interest in terms of gravity as a matter probe for spin foam quantum gravity. If you've got spin foam model of gravity and now you can do spin foam pure Yang-Mills, then it's natural to ask how you might combine them, and I'll give some references at the end of people that have been thinking about this. It's also an alternative approach to problems that are hard in conventionalized gauge theory, such as dynamical fermions. And so Ravelli in the last talk mentioned that perhaps you can perhaps for this reason, this is another reason why the dual method might be simpler. And actually, we have indications that it will be, because it just turns out that you can do an algorithm, a dynamic fermion algorithm, that's both local and exact within the dual framework. And so we're just working out how to implement that now. But it's quite exciting. And so it's another reason why you might work in the dual instead of the conventional theory. And it just may be faster in some contexts. So it's too early to tell right now, because we've coded so far for sort of correctness and cross-checking things. And so we haven't optimized a whole lot. But when we did both implementations, we didn't really know which one was faster than the other. So it's quite possible that, obviously maybe not in every niche, but in some cases, this just may produce more efficient algorithms. Okay, so that's sort of our motivation. 5 minutes? Okay. Some of the challenges, just some of the generic challenges so far that we've encountered are that, like I mentioned, in order to get an ergodic algorithm that satisfies the correct properties such as detailed balance and so on, you need to, you're working in a space that's discrete and is constrained. And so a lot of the moves that you propose get rejected. So there's a high rejection rate to your moves, and so there's generally two strategies for dealing with this. First strategy is you could just speed up the testing. So you can figure out, often you can apply some very simple tests to know that your move is being rejected rather than computing the entire HNJ symbol. So there's basically just speeding up the testing. The other approach would be to try a more sophisticated algorithm, but it's going to be very difficult, that other approach, because the whole way in which our algorithm is set up depends on having the same sort of moves proposed at every configuration. And so if you make your moves a function of where you are in the simulation to lower the rejection rate, it can become very difficult to prove the detailed balance properties that you want. So this is sort of more of an implementation issue than a physics issue. There's another issue that comes up that has more to do with what's going on physically within your simulations, and that is, as you run to weak coupling, there's sort of a sudden increase we notice in the autocorrelation time of the simulation. This was what I mean by autocorrelation time is that the simulation, roughly speaking, is spending a lot of time in a small region of its configuration space, and so this you don't want, because you want your algorithm to mix and you want to sample the entire space. But what we're seeing is sort of a sudden increase in the autocorrelation time. And so this was also encountered in the dual abelian models. So this was also found for the abelian work. And the idea is the idea that they had was that what you need to do is you need to change spins over larger regions in order to sort of break you out of local minima and so on that you're getting trapped within. And so this is just a rough picture. And sort of just by analogy, that's sort of the way we're thinking about dealing with this. So generically, this also happens in spin systems near critical points. And there's a whole theory of cluster algorithms which have done remarkable improvements in spin systems as they approach critical points. And so by analogy, we think the same thing might happen here. So just to briefly conclude, because I don't have much time, an obvious extension of this is to compute Wilson loop observables. And so we're working on implementing code right now. We've figured out an algorithm for how to do it. Higher gauge groups, such as SU3, eventually you want to address the color sector, the strong force. And so for this, it's going to be important to use, in order to find ways of computing our spin networks, the renormalization theory of SU3 will likely have to be applied. And so this is a slightly more, well, I'll say to me right now, a lot more complicated recoupling theory than that of SU2. So we're hoping that it will provide sort of the same tools for evaluating these spin networks. Finally, there's dimension 4. This is the algorithm itself generalizes in a very straightforward way to dimension 4. You're going to have higher valence spin networks, so you're going to need some more labels. But generically, it's the same algorithm, and it'll generalize to this case. And finally, these references of people that have actually thought about coupling spin foam gravity to pure Yang-Mills. There's a paper by Ricci and Pfeiffer. Lots of interesting ideas. Very recently, there's a paper by Simone Spezzali, which is specific to three dimensions, where he talks about three-dimensional Yang-Mills and three-dimensional gravity and bringing them together. And this is interesting because now we can essentially compute both using spin foams. So the timing is probably pretty good for that. And so this is just in conclusion. These are the first results that show agreement between a non-abelian dual algorithm and a conventional algorithm. This is of intrinsic interest as an alternative computational framework. And also it gives you a gauge invariant picture for your lattice simulations. And also it could be a matter probe for spin foam quantum gravity. So again, I refer you to the paper for the details. And I'd like to thank you for your interest.
Questions? I have a semi-humorous one. How much would it terrify you to consider doing this for Ruby?
Well, if you give me, if you tell me how to compute spin networks in a nice way, like recoupling theory and so on, then I'd, be fine. But yeah, no, it's hard enough just going. Well, right now it seems that going from S2 to SU3 is will be non-trivial. And so I can imagine that, yeah.
All right.
Any other questions? Do you have a movie?
Wait.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, originally in my presentation, I had embedded a movie, but since we had to do PDFs, okay, yeah, here we go. Yeah, so this is just an animated picture of what you saw. It's just a Metropolis simulation passing through different configurations. So, just for fun.
Yeah. Okay, let's take a look again.